the woman who will head General Motors. Marketplace is not some engulf and devour corporation. It is a nonprofit, and it is listener-supported. So to keep our coverage strong and relevant, what you could do is make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will really help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by the end of this year. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. There was word this morning that the new CEO of General Motors will be Mary Barra, the current global head of product development at GM. Barra started as an intern on the GM factory floor when she was 18 and got her MBA at Stanford along the way. Forbes contributor Mickey Maynard covers the automotive industry. Ms. Maynard, good morning.
Hello, David.
Tell me about Mary Barra. I mean, she certainly has a GM pedigree here.
So Mary Barra would be known as an insider. She came up through the staff. So if you throw out her name and look at her background, this is exactly the kind of background that past CEOs at General Motors have had.
But if you do look at her name, you notice her gender, and I can't think of another boss of a car company who's female at this point.
Right, and certainly there were talented women in Detroit over the years who easily could have become CEO, but the time wasn't right. There were a couple of women in the 90s that were on a path to the top and either ran out of patience, ran out of time, or got better offers from other places.
So the federal government just sold its remaining stake in GM. It's now back to independent private company. What are some of the early challenges for Mary Barra?
One of her efforts will be making sure GM is stable, growing, and profitable in the American market. And globally, the Chinese market is starting to get a little questionable. GM has had some issues in Latin America, and one of its biggest issues is Europe, where it has been losing money for years and has tried very hard to fix its operations.
Micheline Maynard, former Detroit bureau chief for the New York Times and a contributor to Forbes on matters automotive, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks.
More than 3 years in the making, the final text of the Volcker Rule was supposed to come out this morning, with Wall Street's lawyers ready with their magnifying glasses to look at the fine print. After the great financial collapse, Congress ordered regulators to figure out a way to curb the tendency of investment firms to make big, risky bets with their own money, the sort of proprietary trading that might require a taxpayer bailout if it goes wrong. Financial companies are very concerned that the forthcoming Volcker Rule might be expensive, cumbersome, and hurt their ability to make money. On the other side, there are groups who are worried that the rule might emerge in a bowdlerized form. Bart Naylor is financial policy advocate for the group Public Citizen.
Good morning.
We could see an aggressive Volcker Rule. We could get what you would see as a watered-down Volcker Rule. Now, if it's a weak version, what do you think? Do you think this will renew calls for greater separation between investment and commercial banking?
I think so. I think that American taxpayers, for example, are loath to revisit the 2008 financial crash, which was rooted in the fact that banks became enamored of gambling. That's the investment banking. That's the, as we speak, $44 billion in revenue they get from essentially proprietary trading. And if this Volcker Rule, which sought moral clarity in what banks should do, fails to visit that discipline upon banks, then I think there will be a more intense call for clear separation, Glass-Steagall style.
You know, financial institutions, they like doing their proprietary trading. They can often make lots of money, which in itself helps strengthen the financial system.
Well, let's not have a self-justified financial system. The $44 billion in revenue doesn't just come out of thin air from, you know, the creation of a new product. It comes from making bets. And literally, the London Whale made most of its money the year before it lost a lot of money because American Airlines went bankrupt. Now, why is that socially useful? I don't think it is.
Bart, don't you love that it's been about 4 years since they passed the Dodd-Frank law that would require this Volcker Rule? And beyond that, the weather, the snow that's happening now, yeah, in Washington could come into play here?
It already has. The federal government is closed. The CFTC has already announced it's not meeting today.
How much snow do you have?
Oh, well, it doesn't take much in Washington. I'm looking out my window and there is a quarter inch. I think by the time the commute hour is finished, we're supposed to have a couple of inches. But that's well more than enough to close down Washington.
All right. Well, strap on the crampons and see if you can endure. Bart Naylor at Public Citizen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marketplace is listener supported. I know that just goes in one ear and out the other, but it means it is supported by listeners like you. So to keep our coverage compelling, up to date, up to the minute, if you can, make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount will support your daily dose of business insight from us. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. You can donate by going to marketplace.org by the end of the year, December 31st. Thanks. They are dressed to the nines in Stockholm, Sweden today as the Nobel Prizes get draped around the necks of the laureates. For economics, the award today goes to Robert Shiller, Eugene Fama, and from the University of Chicago, Lars Peter Hansen, whom we reached before he departed for Sweden. Professor Hansen, thanks for taking our call.
Oh, it's my privilege.
Help me with this. Your work embraces the imperfection of economic models, but still allows you to get work done.
I view the work I've done related to statistics and economics as, roughly speaking, how to do something without having to do everything. So economic models, how any model by definition isn't right. When someone just says, oh, your model's wrong, that's not much of an insight. What you want to know is it wrong in important ways or wrong in ways that are less relevant? And you want to know, what does the data really have to say about the model?
One example that comes to mind is, we know a lot about climate change, but there's also a lot we don't know. What do you think your way of thinking about imperfect models would mean for making good decisions about an issue like that?
Yeah, so that's a fascinating question. So, and this shows up not only in the connections to economics and the climate, it also shows up in financial oversight and regulation. Early on in discussions of financial oversight, people would say, well, this is a very complicated problem. Therefore, it requires a complicated solution. And at that step, I would say, well, wait a minute. Just because it's a complicated problem doesn't mean the best course of action immediately is one that's complicated. Because, you know, behind complexity, you can slip in discretion. You can slip in counterproductive measures that overstate our knowledge and the like. And an advantage of more simple approaches is transparency as well.
It'd be nice, for instance, if you could eventually offer some guidance of which of those institutions are, in fact, too big to fail or more likely to fail.
Part of what we have to do, or part of which remains a challenge, is we have to be not scared of letting institutions fail. You know, extended bankruptcy from big financial institutions would just be a disaster, typically, because it could have very big consequences. But we need to figure out better ways to get resolution when financial institutions are struggling in ways that aren't socially so costly to us.
Lars Peter Hansen, along with Eugene Fama and Robert Shiller, are the recipients of this year's Nobel Prize in Economics. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.